There had been Chinese in Java long before the Dutch, long before the Portuguese. Along with squadrons of coolies hired to perform the hard work, scores of Chinese merchants had sailed down from the southern ports of Fujian province and had set up a prosperous agriculture on the Javan shore. They cultivated sugar and made gallons of the cocoa palm toddies and rice and jaggery arraks that so beguiled and rendered happily insensible generations of visiting Western sailors. Cohen immediately spotted their usefulness. He insisted they stay and become part of his new community, offering them, unlike his fellow Dutchmen, the right to trade privately, and to take pepper and bird's nests and sea cucumbers, all of which were readily available in Java, back to their homes across the South China Sea, without interference from the monopoly of the company. "They are an uncommonly clever, courteous, industrious, and obliging people," wrote one of Cohen's colleagues. "There's nothing you can imagine that they do not undertake and practice. Many keep eating-houses or tea-houses, or earn money fishing or carrying or conveying people." It has been 400 years since those words were written. So far as the impression offered today by the diaspora of overseas Chinese is concerned, very little seems to have changed. Slowly the community was born and struggled to its feet, matured, and began to grow. At first, no Javanese were allowed to live within the city walls, and no Javanese were employed as slaves either, lest they band together and conspire against the Dutch. But by the middle of the 17th century, the ban had been relaxed somewhat, and a census in 1673 records the presence within the walls of 27,000 inhabitants, of whom 1,300 were classed as Moors and Javanese. 2,000 of the people were Dutch, nearly 3,000 Chinese, and 5,000 were members of a curious group called the Mardikers, who were Portuguese-speaking Asians.